Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season.
It's time for Barbecue Nation with JT. So fire up your grill, light the charcoal, and get your smoker cooking. Now, from the Turn It, Don't Burn It studios in Portland, here's JT.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Nation, Barbecue Nation. I'm JT, along with two Hall of Famers today, because it's Thanksgiving coming up and we don't want you to make one mistake. So, of course, we've got Hall of Famer, my co-host Leanne Whippin, and Hall of Famer Meathead Goldwyn from AmazingRibs.com, or as he just likes to be called, Meathead. So we're going to jump right into it. Thanksgiving. I actually think Thanksgiving is a harder holiday for most people, not for us, but for most people to cook for, because of the size of the bird, all the side dishes, trying to get your timing correct, and all that. I'd like to get your take on that straight out of the gate.
Who goes first?
Ladies first.
Oh, okay. Well, most people don't cook for mass quantities of people, and usually Thanksgiving, you're cooking for a lot more. So that's one caveat there that makes it more difficult. But I think Thanksgiving dinner sides are things that you can make ahead of time and warm up. So I think that people don't have to be so stressed out that they can try to do that.
That's good. I mean, we all do that mm-hmm. cook for the scrambling hordes. But I do think as far as trying to time, you know, you can't really make your mashed potatoes ahead of time. At least I never found the secret to that. And then, you know, managing your turkey, even if you're spatchcocking it, somebody's got to be paying attention. Now, True. If you do what they do at Meathead's house, he does the turkey for the family and he spatchcocks it. But I don't think he does anything else but eat pie. Am I correct?
Stuffing.
Yes, that's true.
I love stuffing. I think I like it better than the turkey. But to your question, you know, there's a lot of recipes and websites and newspapers and magazines that purport to give you the solution to the ultimate turkey, and I am among them. And the technique I espouse on AmazingRibs.com. And by the way, if you go to our website and sign up for our newsletter now, we send you a 70-plus page ebook on cooking for Thanksgiving, focused on turkey, several different techniques for turkey, including the technique I use. But at the bottom line, it's really not hard. I mean, basically, all you need to do is just sprinkle it with a little salt a day or two in advance. And that makes a little difference. If you don't have time to do that, then it's not the end of the world. And roast it at around 325, 350 until it reaches 160 in the breast and you're done. Yeah. Now, there's 100 different variations, and I'm sure we'll get into it today about seasoning it and rubbing it and what to do with the cavity and so on. And if you want to, you know, make incremental improvements till it is spectacular, we can share some of our tricks and techniques with you.
Sure. I'm not a, well, let's jump right into one that you see a lot out there. I'm not a big brining guy. Now, I know some people swear by it. That's perfectly fine. I'm more of the thought and rub some salt on the skin and a little bit on the cavity just for grins and giggles. And that's kind of my deal. I do it that way.
Well, salting, we've talked about this before, but it's worth repeating briefly. Salt is the magic rock. Salt is just sodium chloride, two atoms. Sugar is 23, 24 atoms for most sugars or more. Salt can, when it gets wet on the surface of the turkey, it splits into sodium and chloride ions, and they can migrate deep into the turkey. And when they get there, they can alter the shape of the protein so that it holds moisture better.
Right.
So salt is really crucial. If you put sugar and black pepper and garlic, they don't go past the skin. They can't. The molecules are too large. So they'll flavor the exterior, which is fine, but they don't affect the interior or the moisture level or anything else like that. For a while there, about a decade or so ago, everybody was taking their turkeys and dunking them in a big bucket or a beer cooler full of apple juice and black pepper and garlic and all sorts of goodies and salt. And of course, in the process, the salt would penetrate. The other stuff just gets on the surface.
Right.
But everybody seemed to think it would get in there. But if you cut open a turkey breast, you're not going to taste apple juice or garlic. We've migrated. I've been a proponent of a technique called dry brining, which is basically what you just described. Mm-hmm. And today, son of a gun, the New York Times finally woke up Eric Kim, who's a brilliant cook, and he's espousing dry brining, which, of course, I've been espousing for more than a decade. And basically, it's just a matter of sprinkle some salt on there. A day in advance is nice to give the salt time to penetrate. He likes 2 or 3 days. That's fine, too, if you want. But salt will penetrate, and it will do its magic. And you don't need to do anything of the other stuff. You don't need the apple juice. You don't need the salt, the garlic, the pepper. You can put that on, and you probably do want to season the skin. I like herbs on the skin of, you know, rosemary, thyme, that sort of thing. That you can put on just before you cook. You don't need to do that in advance.
Right.
Because it's not traveling at all. So, yes, your technique of sprinkling it with salt, you put a little more on the thick pieces like the breast than you would on the wings, and away you go.
Yeah. So do you wash it off?
No, it goes in. It doesn't stay on the surface. It goes in. Do the same with steak. Do the same with burgers. It penetrates. It gets drawn in. And it penetrates. It doesn't pull out the moisture. It doesn't dry. If you've sprinkled a rub, which if you buy a commercial rub and you sprinkle it on meat, you often see it pulls liquid out. But it's not the salt pulling the liquid out. It's the sugar and the other stuff. The salt goes in and it stays in and it doesn't come out and it does its magic. It helps moisturize the bird. It's pretty simple to do. I use Morton kosher salt. My rule of thumb is 1/2 teaspoon per pound, but you obviously want to put it on a little heavier on the breasts and than you would on the drumstick or the wings.
You do that same process on when you're just buying a breast versus the whole bird, because they sure. got those for sale. And what if it's skinless? There's some people that don't like skin. I don't know why or where. What planet they came from, but
same thing. Yeah, I love the skin.
Yeah,
same thing. I mean, just sprinkle it again. Salt amplifies the flavor without altering it. Garlic alters the flavor. Sugar alters the flavor. Herbs alter the flavor. Salt doesn't. It just turns the dial up to 11.
So another question: you made a post, I think yesterday or the day before. I actually read your stuff. Think you figure out once in a while. I give it a like. You know. And I'm guilty of trying this. I fell for it about 20 years ago or so, cooking the turkey upside down, thinking that the juice was going to run down and do it. Doesn't do a damn thing. But what
was another one of these trends that caught on the internet.
Yeah.
Even before the internet, there's no super highways in turkey. The moisture that is in meat is trapped within cells. It's trapped within muscle fibers. It's also in between muscle fibers. It's not like blood that has vessels where, you know, if you stand on your head, the blood will rush to your head. That doesn't happen with any meat, turkey, chicken, Breast side down, breast side up. It's not going to enhance the moisture. The moisture stays. Otherwise, you know, you cook breast side down. So what are you going to have? Dry drumsticks? No, it just the moisture just stays there.
However, think that injecting, you do get the flavors.
Oh, yeah. Injecting is a very good way to add moisture and flavor. And, you know, a lot of people will just inject with a dilute salt solution, which has the magical effect that salt does. Others will enhance it, and you can inject with butter. Now, if you want to inject with butter, call it butterballing, if you want to inject with butter, don't do it when the bird is cold, because if you are using a needle, it just clogs up the needle because cold, even if you're using melted butter, the cold solidifies the butter. What you need to do is you start cooking, and when the bird starts getting warm, like 80, 90 degrees, when butter is still liquid, then you inject during the cooking process. So you can stick butter in there. You can stick chicken stock, you know, or just plain salt water. And there are compounds out there, I know you know about them, that the competition cooks use, that have compounds like phosphates and other things, which are flavor enhancers and also moisturizers.
Yeah, I just, like I said, and the worst part about it was just because the instructions were cook it upside down for like 2 hours and then flip it over. What a mess that made. Mm-hmm. I just remember I had turkey grease everywhere.
Well, there was some sense in flipping it, and you can avoid that. But the sense is most people will cook the turkey in a pan with high sides in a V-shaped rack. So now you put the bird in there. Now there's water in the bottom of the pan or liquid in the bottom of the pan. So the oven is surrounding the top half of the bird with 350, 400, whatever your oven temp is. But the bottom half, because of the water, can't go above 212. So now you have a big differential in temperature. The top half is cooking at 300, 350. The bottom half is cooking at maybe 225, 250. And so what you end up with is the bottom half of the bird is flabby and soft and wet and ugly. So if you flip, then you can brown the under half. But the better technique is to take it out of that V-shaped rack and put a rack on top of the pan so the bird sits above the pan.
Right.
Now the hot air can circulate all around. When you put it in the pan, the hot air bounces off the sides and the cool liquid below prevents the bottom from cooking evenly. So you just put a rack on top of the pan, or if you're cooking it indoors, I know it sounds goofy, but you put the bird right on the oven rack and put the pan on the oven rack below. Okay, you got a dirty oven rack when you're done, you got to scrub it, but you get that air circulating all around. Well, of course, on a grill, this is no problem, because you put the pan underneath the grill grate and you catch the drippings down there and you put the bird on the grill grate and the warm air circulates all around, all around, all around, all around, and you get a beautifully tan bird.
There you go. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back with Meathead from AmazingRibs.com and fellow Hall of Famer Leanne Whippin right after this. Hey, everybody, it's Jeff here. I want to tell you about something really cool, Heritage Steel Cookware. I just got mine. I do a lot of cooking, and it's got 5-ply construction stay cool handles. It's titanium strengthened. It's got all the great stuff. Just go to heritagesteel.us and find out more. You'll love it. I guarantee it. Welcome back to our Thanksgiving special, How to Cook Your Bird and Survive the Day. We'd like to thank the folks at the Oregon Crab Commission, Dungeness Crab Commission from Sea to Plate. Great stuff there. Been doing a lot with them this year. Eating a lot of crab, too, I might add. But it's really good stuff. We're talking.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
I mean, the light bulb just went off. I've heard of oyster stuffing for turkey.
Yeah.
Why not a crab stuffing?
You could.
I mean, that sounds better than oyster stuffing, and I love oysters.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually working.
See, you know, crab with some bread, you know, a crab cake. Essentially make a crab cake.
Exactly.
Right.
Now you're talking.
Oh, yeah. It put a sweat on you. I'm actually working on a recipe right now. Not to digress too much, but I got a couple of shows coming up when I get back home to do. And one is kind of a crab frittata for breakfast, like for Christmas Eve breakfast or whenever you celebrate. And there's always that breakfast, but nobody wants to eat too much because you're going to have a big dinner later. So I'm working on this kind of crab frittata thing. So
nice.
Work out nice. Like that. The one, and I want to go back to this just for a second. And in your article, you were talking about the grain of the meat, why it doesn't work tipping the bird upside down, because the grain's horizontal, it's not vertical. Okay. And I don't think most people, well, nobody thinks like we do. I mean, that goes to show, but I thought that was a very valid point for, you know, cousin Bill telling you he has the absolute best way to cook a turkey. And then you got the science right there. So it doesn't work that way, Bill. So,
well, first of all, it's not going anywhere anyhow under any circumstances, but yes, that is a fair point. The grain runs horizontal.
Yep, absolutely. So, at the top of the show, I talked a little bit about timing. And if you do like Meathead does, and he's assigned to cook the turkey, timing is a relevant term because he's going to try to match the kitchen and what Lou's doing because he's already eaten two pies. like that, I think that timing thing in any aspect of cooking is one of the real keys there. You know, Leanne, you ran restaurants, you know, you couldn't have your steak done and still waiting for a baked potato to come out of the oven. You know,
that's true.
Yeah. Very difficult like that. So when you're working, Leanne, let's start with you. When you're working on your Thanksgiving dinner, what's the very first thing you do? I mean, assuming you've got all the ingredients, the turkeys and this and that, what's the very first thing you do?
Well, a lot of people overlook the defrosting time if they're getting a frozen turkey.
Yeah.
And it takes a long time to defrost a turkey in a refrigerator, a good 3 days or whatever. You also need to determine how much turkey you need to feed everyone, because you think 10-pound turkey, oh, that's going to feed, you know, 10 people. It might, but you always want to have leftovers. So I always go a little bit bigger on my turkeys, and I always make my desserts in advance, like pies or whatever kind of dessert. So that's out of the way.
Yeah.
And, you know, mashed potatoes, you can peel your potatoes and put them, you know, with garlic in the water and have that already done, and then bring it to a boil. You know, if you're going to do fresh green beans, you can, you know, cut those in advance if you're going to do French green beans, whatever. So I try to do as much prep as possible. So basically all I'm doing is, and you have to think about what's going to, if you have one oven, you have to think about the turkey's taking up that real estate. So anything else that's going in the oven, albeit rolls, now dinner rolls, you could take the turkey out and then put your rolls in, you know, while you're doing that, because they only take 10 minutes or whatever, or if you're just warming them up. But you got to think about what's being done in the oven and what's being done on the stove. So you don't want to have anything else going in the oven with your turkey per se. So I try to make sure that all of my sides I can do stovetop, or that I can heat up even in a microwave slowly. And when I'm taking the turkey out, if I can just hold those foods in that warm oven with the residual heat. So that's kind of some of the things I think about.
Yeah.
Well, that's all the more reason to grill or smoke the turkey, is that leaves the oven open for more pie.
True.
Yeah.
That's true.
Absolutely. Now,
I got to tell you something fun that's cool.
Sure.
My wife and one of her nieces, who is an adult now, she's in her 40s, they have for 20 years now, on Wednesday before Thanksgiving, had Pie Day. And it used to just be the two of them. They would get together and bake pies. But as the family grew, the kids joined the event. And we've had as many as 14 nieces, nephews from age 3 on up to 20. And they all show up for Pie Day. And they all make pies. We serve three or four pies after dinner. And of course, it's the standards, apple, pumpkin, and pecan. But they always do something wild and crazy, you know, with fudgy or something. And then the kids will often make individual pie. But I just think it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
It's a marvelous event, and they all get together and they have a laugh session for hours and flour everywhere. And it's just very cool.
That's the one day a year, folks, that Meathead does not leave the house. That's it.
It's not here, and I'm not invited.
Oh, my God. The trauma.
And you can guess why.
So, something you just touched on, and this is the voice of experience here. If you're going to, like, cook your turkey in a pellet grill, make sure your pellet grill has been cleaned. Make sure that there's fresh pellets, that the burn pot is clean. If you can get a vacuum up through the auger, get that cleaned. We are in November, a lot more moisture in the air and all that. And I can tell you that I'm fortunate enough to have a couple of pellet grills. Most people don't. And I learned the hard way out there. My future son-in-law came in one day on Thanksgiving and he said, "Is it supposed to be smoking like that?" And I said, "Well, it's, you know, just getting started." He goes, no. And I looked out there and it was ugly and didn't really hurt the turkey, but it was a mess in the smoker. So just word of experience there. Make sure your auger's working. You got fresh pellets. Like I said, it's cleaned out. The grates are cleaned out, especially if you want to try to do what Meathead said. If you've got a two rack tier system in there and you want to put a pan below your bird, whatever, even if you're spatchcocking, make sure it's cleaned up there. That's Jeff's words of wisdom for you.
Amen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick break and step away for a few minutes. Leanne and Meathead and I will be right back with our Thanksgiving special. Hey, everybody, it's JT, and I have eaten, if you've ever looked at me, you know that, but I have eaten seafood all over the world, and I can tell you there's no place better than here in Oregon and our Dungeness crab. If you want to learn more about Oregon Dungeness crab, just go to OregonDungeness.org and find out how to cook it, how to catch it, where to buy it, and the sustainability of what they're doing there in the Oregon Crab Commission. Check it out.
Hi, I'm Stan Hayes. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Operation Barbecue Relief, and you are listening to Jeff and Leanne on Barbecue Nation.
Welcome back to the Barbecue Nation Thanksgiving special with Leanne Whippin and Meathead from AmazingRibs.com, two frequent faces here on the show, and we always love them. Without pie, now Meathead, I know this is going to send you into convulsions, but without pie, what's your favorite part of the Thanksgiving dinner?
The stuffing. I love stuffing. I actually, I really work hard at the bird, and I do some fun stuff with the bird, and I make it as good as I possibly can. And I've tried every technique on earth, and it's about as good as you can get turkey. But when you get down to it, turkey is kind of bland, even if you've injected it and you've seasoned it and you've dry brined it and cooked it to exactly the right temperature and everything. It's not a real strong, flavorful piece of meat, not even as strong as chicken. But boy, that stuffing, if you get to work on that. And just a basic, you know, go to the Pepperidge Farm box, read the recipe off the box. That's a good one. But there's a bazillion different fun stuffing. I mean, we talked about oyster stuffing. Right. I've seen that out there. I've never tried it, but I know people make it. Cornbread stuffing with chorizo or andouille. We have a recipe on our website that I have tried for, slider stuffing. You get, frozen hamburgers in a box, sliders. And you chop them up, you throw them in the blender and you add some, chicken stock and other things. It makes a really nice stuffing. Just a whole bunch of fun stuffings. But I make a pretty standard sage-based breadcrumb stuffing. And we save breadcrumbs and from all, you know, we just had a loaf of French bread the other day. We were cutting it up and we were using it. And there was a big pile of crumbs left. We save it in a jar. And that goes into stuffing. But my favorite thing, and you mentioned it earlier, is first of all, you do not want to put stuffing in the bird. And I think we're all three agreed on that.
No.
No? Okay. Okay. I will make the case that when you stuff the bird, you have to cook the stuffing because the juices in the turkey are not safe. And the juices in the turkey get into the stuffing. So the center of the stuffing must be cooked to a safe temperature, which is 160, or USDA says 165. I think 160 is safe. So you've got to cook the stuffing to 160. Well, if warm air is working its way down through the skin, into the meat, into the stuffing, to the center of the stuffing, while it's progressing, it's heating the exterior of the bird, the skin and the outer layers are warming up, and they get hotter than the interior because the heat builds up in the outside and water evaporates. And so you're going to end up with a drier bird. You've essentially, you're cooking a bowling ball. It's a big thermal mass. And so you're just flirting with dry turkey, I think. Now, I love the stuffing, but the juices from the bird are really not altering the stuffing much.
Right.
So if you're going to do a Norman Rockwell bird, don't put the stuffing in there because it'll cook faster if warm air can get into the cavity. Don't stick oranges in there and other things. Let warm air get in there. It'll cook faster and you'll have a moister bird. What I like to do with the stuffing is I make the stuffing and I'll mix in a little egg. And if you go to AmazingRibs.com, we have a recipe there for what I call stuffing muffins, because I put them in a muffin pan. And that way everybody gets a muffin made of stuffing that has a really crispy top, and everybody wants crispy stuffing. Uh-huh. And when you stuff the bird, there's just that little round section sticking out of the back end that gets crispy. All the rest is very soft and wet. When you make stuffing muffins, you get crispy around the edges, crispy around the top, and they just look cool. A muffin full of stuffing, and everybody gets exactly the same amount. Nobody gets more crispy than anybody else. And I think the bird will cook faster and better without the stuffing. Now, you can refute me, please.
I guess it's just I like that Norman Rockwell. I've never really had trouble with my stuffing coming to temp, and the breast meat, and I'm a brine person, whether it be dry or wet, to help with that moisture, and that usually gets me out of, you know, the problem of a dry turkey breast.
So the next question is, and I'll go first, giblets or no giblets? I'm a big giblet fan, and I've talked about this before. I grew up on a farm. We didn't waste anything. We have a store here in my little town that actually sells big packages of turkey giblets. And, I buy two packages. Don't everybody get grossed out now. One to cook for me that I munch on for 2 or 3 days. And one that I cook, trim and slice up and put in the stuffing, and sometimes I put them in the gravy, depending on who the audience is, you might say. And some people are just aghast that, you know, you're eating an organ like that. To me, it's just a kind of another version of dark meat. So there's my case for that.
I use it to make my stock, and that's what I use in the stuffing. So but don't use the liver.
Right. No.
Because the liver will make, you know, cloudy and gross.
Right.
But yeah. And I actually brown those in a pan first, and then I add my liquid to it. I just feel it enhances the flavor. And then add your celery, carrot, onion, you know, peppercorns, bay leaf, whatever you want to do. And that is the base for my gravy, which brings me to gravy being my favorite part because it goes on the stuffing and the turkey and the mashed potatoes. And I really believe in a really good gravy. And it also, if your turkey happens to be dry, it makes it a little forgiving.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, absolutely. I set the livers aside. We freeze them and I'll make a pate or sometimes I just give it to the dog. But the gizzard, what I do is, and this is a wonderful technique, as I mentioned, I put the bird on the rack of the grill and under it, I put a pan. And in that pan, I put the neck, I put the gizzards, I trim all the excess skin from around both cavities, the tips of the wings, which are going to burn. I throw them in there. Then I throw in some carrots, some celery, an apple. Either some chicken stock or water and wine, and then the herbs, sage and whatever herbs I feel in the mood. And I fill that pan a lot with essentially the makings of turkey soup. It's a turkey stock. And mm-hmm. as the bird cooks, it drips and it drips into the pan and smoke collects on the surface of the pan. So you have this marvelous turkey stock under the bird. And so when the bird hits about 150, my target's 160. When it hits about 150, I'll pull that pan out. I'll strain it. I'll taste it. If it's fine, it's fine. If it's a little weak, I'll put it in a pot on the top of the stove and reduce it somewhat. And it's a fabulous gravy. And I don't add flour or anything to thicken it, because if you pour your regular traditional the gravy with a flour base on top of turkey, it doesn't really penetrate the meat. It just sits on top. Now, it's great flavor, though. But this stock, which is thin and watery, will penetrate the meat and adds a great deal of flavor. And it's also great for adding to the stuffing, to moisturize the stuffing. And I usually, if you do it that way, there's usually at least a quart left over after Thanksgiving, which I just drink. I pour it in a coffee mug and it is just, I mean, it's turkey soup. Right. It's just fantastic.
My favorite thing on Friday, I will take a plate or a bowl, doesn't matter, but I will put some stuffing in it and I will put some mashed potatoes in it. And then I just load it up with the gravy. This is kind of Jeff's version of what you just said, except I don't drink it. And I'm happy as a clam sitting there watching college football or whatever, eating that combination of stuff. I mean, it, you know, it'll put you to sleep with that many carbs and stuff, but what a way to go. I just love it.
I do the turkey sandwich. I take sliced turkey breast, put the cranberries on top of that. And a little gravy on top of that and a couple of slices of bread. And oh, man,
good to go. Good to go. And with your stuffing muffins, to me, they're kind of like a dinner dunking donut in gravy. You know, you can have a little ramekin or something with gravy there and just dunk
you
them
can
in
tear them off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that's really good stuff.
My wife makes a turkey pot pies after Thanksgiving.
Mm. Yeah.
They're really good. I mean, just like chicken pot pie.
Yeah. Right. My mom used to make turkey soup afterwards and it wasn't the best.
Well, now I was mentioning the what I put under the bird. I got to confess, and this will probably get me kicked off the air and anybody listening will stop listening. I don't even spatchcock anymore. I break it down into eight pieces. I separate the drumstick and the thigh from the body. I cut the breasts off the bones. I cut the wings off and I cook them individually so I can use my instant read thermometer and get those breasts and thighs at the optimum temperature. And you know, I go to my brother-in-law's house and he does a Norman Rockwell turkey with the stuffing and everything. And so everybody gets to see a big, beautiful bird. And I just bring mine over there in a beer cooler, keeping it hot, And it's all broken down and it's cooked that way. It's brown on all sides. It's tender. It's juicy. Each piece is cooked to optimum temperature. And when I do that, I have a carcass. And that carcass goes in that pan underneath the bird as it cooks. I break the bones and that stock now is enriched with the marrow and the connective tissues. It's all in between the ribs and all the bones. So that's the coup de grace for my gravy.
Mm-hmm. There you go. We're going to take a break. We're going to come. Well, we might go eat because this is making me hungry.
I know.
And then we'll be right back. You're listening to Barbecue Nation with Jeff, Leanne, and Meathead.
Hey, everybody, it's JT. You know, I talk about Painted Hills all the time, and we always say beef the way nature intended, but it's more than that, because each bite of Painted Hills will make your taste buds explode, put a big, bright smile on your face, and whoever is at your dinner table will have a big, bright smile on their face, and you can thank me for that later. Just go to PaintedHillsBeef.com and find out more. You won't regret it. Hey, everybody, JT here. I want to tell you about Hammerstahl knives. Hammerstahl combines German steel with beautiful and functioning designs. They're part of the Heritage Steel Group, which also does their pots and pans. So go to heritagesteel.us. Check out the Hammerstahl knives. If you're really into cooking, I think you're really going to like them.
Welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT, along with Hall of Famer Leanne Whippin and Hall of Famer Meathead from AmazingRibs.com. Again, we'd like to thank the folks at Painted Hills Natural Beef, the Oregon Dungeness Crab Commission, and pig powder. Can you use pig powder on turkey, Leanne?
You sure can.
Yeah?
It's excellent on turkey. But, you know, I like more savory turkey, like sagey, you know, earthy. And I'm going to have to go to Meathead for his poultry seasoning because I love that.
I love you. And I use that stuff too.
Yeah. It really is delicious. And you know what? Even in the stuffing.
That's very French. Mm-hmm. And it's very Leanne because you have classic chef palate. And the French have, they call it poultry seasoning. And basically that's what my chicken rub is. It's poultry seasoning.
Yeah.
You know, and it's got my own little twist on it, but you've been very generous in praising it. And when you run out, let me know. I'll ship you a refund.
Thank you. But anyway, pig powder. Yeah, it's good if you want sweet with a little heat. It's excellent. So, and you have to give it a very, you know, this is true for turkey. You have a lot of meat underneath. So when you season your bird, you need to season it as much as that will hold because your meat to skin ratio, you won't taste the spices if you don't spice it up enough, even with salt and pepper. You got to hit it pretty hard. So don't underseason your turkey.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Meathead, do you had something you wanted to address?
Yeah, I just wanted to forgive me for being a little maudlin or philosophical, but I think Thanksgiving is the coolest of all the holidays because now, I know some people will do a ham or maybe, some sort of the goose or something else for Thanksgiving, but raviolis or something. But most of us cook turkey, and most of us have cranberries, and most of us have sweet potatoes. And it's a menu that most of us share all across this country.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of politics, race, religion, all the division that we've just had over an election, we hold hands on Thursday and we eat the same meal. We break bread together. We rejoice together over the same food. It's like one big giant family dinner. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know of any society, any race, religion, country around the world that has anything similar. And I think it's just truly marvelous. And it makes it a special holiday, especially since for those of us who love food and who love cooking, it's a holiday that is centered around food. And we have many other holidays which are religious, or, you know, 4th of July, which is, you know, essentially political. But this is a food holiday. It's our holiday. And I just think it's unequaled and really inspirational.
I would agree with you there. I think that I don't send emails to me, folks. Christmas dinner, not the event of Christmas of having family around and stuff, but Christmas dinner, to me is a very nice, very wonderful thing. But usually at the end of Christmas dinner, I'm exhausted. I don't know what the difference is. I cook just as much food at Christmas as I do at Thanksgiving. But I would agree with you that Thanksgiving is centered around the food and giving thanks, period. There's not a lot of attachments to it, like gift giving and trying to make it to Aunt Mabel's by 2. And so we can get out of there at 4 and go to mom and dad's at 6 or whatever. And we've all suffered through that in our lives at Christmas. And I say that kind of tongue in cheek, but I really think that Thanksgiving is a way to give thanks. And speaking of that, you both know something I did a couple weeks ago. But I would say this, if you know anybody that's having trouble, and especially a veteran, maybe they don't want to come to your house, maybe they can't, whatever, fix them something to eat. There's, you know, 150 million pounds of leftovers on Thanksgiving. Fix a plate for somebody and take it and find them and give it to them. That may be the only real meal they have for days. I don't know. Everybody's situation is unique. But I've really become a champion of that, if you will, because yes. I think that it pisses me off to see anybody go hungry, but it meant more so, and this is my own selfish reasons because of my family and stuff, but to see veterans who served our country and served us, and we could certainly serve them a few meals. So.
Well, you still are, and I should point out that you were recently given a special award by the Clark County Veterans Assistance Center for that work that you do for veterans. And that is so cool. And it was a very special event. I saw a video of it. I mean, there weren't 20 guys getting this award. It was you. And that is so admirable. And I thank you. And the country thanks you. This year, for the first time, since it's at my brother-in-law's house, he is inviting two training sailors from the Glenview Naval Air Station, cool. which is north of Chicago. The orphans, you know, they're up there training, and for Thanksgiving, and a lot of those trainees go home, but some can't go home. You know, it's too far; they can't afford it, or whatever. So he's having two of them over.
That's nice.
And I think that's very cool of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I'll say it again, if you can, the term giving thanks, which is what the holiday is around for, and thanks for our country, I just think it's important if you can help out a veteran there with a good meal, do it. There you go. I'll get off my soapbox now. So anyway, all right, we've got about a minute and a half left, but After Hours is coming up with some very interesting questions that we're going to test Leanne and Meathead with. Favorite pie? And do you make excess pies so you have one? I've said this before on the show.
What is this term, excess pie?
Well, it's kind of a conundrum.
I've never heard of such a thing.
Yeah, okay. Well, I was trying to think of the right term to ask sarcastically. I make an extra, but this year I'm not going to, but I always make an extra pecan pie and I put it in our outdoor fridge and nobody knows that's there except me. My wife doesn't eat pecan pie. So I'm a happy camper and I've got pecan pie from Thursday to Sunday. You know what I mean? And there's an extra bowl of each day of handmade whipped cream, or I get a fresh tub of ice cream and stash it out there depending on what I want. And that's the way I handle it.
Now, exactly where is this outdoor fridge?
Leanne knows.
Pecan is my favorite pie too.
Leanne knows. Yeah,
it is my favorite pie too. So let's not eat together. We'll have a problem. And I do make, like, when I get a head count on how many people are going to be there, I don't make the exact amount of slices, you know, a one-on-one ratio. It's usually 2-to-1 because sometimes people want to try both of them. So you cut a slice in half. And it's always been a problem in our family are the pies, because that's where the argument starts. Albeit Thanksgiving or not, that's where the argument starts. So I kind of make excess pies, not just because I like to eat pie after Thanksgiving, but just to avoid the arguments.
Yeah. Well, I talked about my wife and her niece and their pie day. And because there's so many, I think it's around 14 of them this year is scheduled. There's quite a lot of pie.
Yeah.
And of course, I feel obligated to try them all.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's always the three traditional: apple, pumpkin, and pecan. But they often do one or two or three more, and there's always plenty. And that is a great way to top off this marvelous meal. Yes.
Absolutely. I throw in a cherry pie, and I also throw in a cream cheese pie, which is very simple, folks. I'll tell you, the recipe is here. You don't even have to write it down. You take one of those small cans of condensed milk and 1 8-ounce brick of cream cheese and a couple of drops of lemon in there. You got to wait till the cream cheese can be beat up and stuff. So it's got to, you know, warm up a bit. Anyway, beat that up with that condensed milk in there, pour it in a graham cracker crust and put it in their fridge the day before. Because it takes a while for it to set up. One of the richest pies you'll ever eat. And you can put cherries, strawberries, blueberries, no berries, whatever you want, kiwi, put it all on the top there. Anyway, we got to get out of here, but we will be sticking around, all three of us, for after hours. Meathead, thank you, as always.
And, thank you, and best wishes to you and all your listeners and Leanne for a delicious and thankful Thanksgiving. And always fun to talk to you.
It is.
Thanksgiving to you both and all of our listeners.
Yeah. So here's what's going to happen, folks. This show airs right before Thanksgiving. And so on Thanksgiving weekend, we'll be doing a best of show. So I hope you enjoy your family and the football. Stay out of the malls and Black Friday events for your own public safety and enjoy the weekend. Until then, take care. And remember, don't forget, go to AmazingRibs.com. to find out all the stuff Meathead's talking about. And remember, it's most important on this holiday. Turn it, don't burn it. See you next time.
Barbecue Nation is produced by JTSD LLC Productions in association with Salem Media Group. All rights reserved.